Funding for The Front Row on Texas Tech Public Radio comes from the Helen Jones Foundation and from Citibank. Citibank's award-winning app delivers features that are redefining mobile banking, like the ability to turn your debit card off if it's ever lost or stolen, and the ability to raise ATM and spending limits. More information is at citibankonline.com. Citibank, member FDIC. Support also comes from Texas Tech's JT and Margaret Talkington College of Visual and Performing Arts. Art, music, theater, and dance. Dean Noel Zoller invites you to enjoy some of the 800 performances and exhibits produced each year by talented students, faculty, and visiting artists. See the stars of tomorrow on the stage today. Texas Tech's JT and Margaret Talkington College of Visual and Performing Arts. Explore, dream, discover. And from Lubbock's Cultural District, always creative, never flat. More information is available at lubbockculturaldistrict.org. Today's edition of The Front Row offers a glimpse into the intellectual life of the university, specifically the Institute for the Study of Western Civilization, which offers not only lectures and symposiums for the life of the university, but offers this to the greater community at large. On today's edition of The Front Row, we are pleased to have in the studio Dr. Stephen Balch, who is director of the Institute for the Study of Western Civilization here at Texas Tech University. And he's a very, very good friend to the radio and to this radio show. And we're very, very happy to have him back in the studio. Dr. Balch, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
The Institute for the Study of Western Civilization has, as one of its offerings to the university and to the community, a series of lectures and symposia, of which one is currently in progress. If you would, unpack it for us and tell us about it.
Well, we're doing something that I think is fairly unique in American higher education. We are trying to concentrate the energies and intelligence and expertise of an entire university on a particular big theme, and we're devoting a week to it. This is the first of 4 weeks, actually, organized in that fashion that will take place during 2018. This time around, we're looking at science and the scientific revolution. Can't have a bigger theme than that. In April, it'll be Shakespeare and his legacy. In September, it'll be the founding of the American Republic. And in November of 2018, the 100th anniversary of the day the guns fell silent on the Western Front, we'll be looking at the Great War and its impact on the world. So these weeks consist of, we had this time around, 6 lectures by people in different fields all about science. We have an exhibit of Remnant Trust texts about the scientific revolution at the library. And of course, we have the great honor and privilege of the presence of Dr. Peter Deere, a distinguished authority on science and science history from Cornell University. He has given an outstanding lecture last night, and he has also been visiting classes of various professors to talk about the nature of science to their students. So we've been quite active. We have an essay contest, the winner of which, it's an essay contest in which you'll respond to what Peter Deere has said in his lecture, and the winner of that will get a $1,000 scholarship, and there are second and third place scholarships as well. So we're doing a great deal, and we'd hope this might be a model, not only for our own university going forward, but for universities around the country. It's really what the intellectual life of a university should revolve around. Big questions, common effort.
Well, that's exactly where I was going to go with this, that anybody looking at this would take a look at these various symposia that you're offering and say that's exactly what the Academy should be doing.
I agree. Of course, the Academy has many lines of business nowadays, and they're valuable, but I think kind of returning it for a while at least to discourse about a great theme is a valuable intellectual service, and I'm proud that our Institute is providing it.
So what have you done over the course of an entire week with this particular subject?
So we started off on Monday with a lecture by Professor Richard Meek on acoustical science and music. The next day, we had 3 lectures in Saratam. First was Dr. Barbara Hahn, who talked about technology in the Industrial Revolution. The next was by our Horn professor, David Larmore, in Classics, who talked about ancient Greek science. And the final one by our Horn professor in English, Bruce Clark, who talked about science fiction. This morning, in a philosophy class that Dr. Deer was able to attend, we had a lecture by Joel Velasco on testability in science, and also the debate about creationism and evolution that's taken place in the courts and in our classes. And tomorrow, Dr. Patricia Maloney will be giving a lecture on sociology as a science.
You mentioned the Remnant Trust. For people who don't know, tell us exactly what that is.
The Remnant Trust is a 1,300-item collection now housed here at Texas Tech, though it has independent status as a organization. And those 1,300 texts are first and early edition books, in some cases pamphlets and other types of materials, that deal, for the most part, with the history of liberty, but it really goes beyond that, liberty and human dignity. So, for example, among the things they have are a first edition of the King James Bible, which is well worth looking at. The interesting thing about the text, some of which go out on loan, are that they can be handled. You actually can have students come down and leaf through the pages under a little bit of supervision, but nonetheless have the example of really holding history in their hands. So they have a number of books on science, which we're exhibiting now, and we hope to have other exhibits related to the subjects of those week-long themes that I mentioned earlier.
Well, Dr. Balch, thank you very, very much. And for people who want more information about this, where can they get their hands on that?
Go to our website, which is westernciv.ttu.
Great. Excellent. Also in the studio with us is Dr. Peter Deer, who is from Cornell University and is a featured speaker during the course of this particular symposium offered by the study of Western civilization here. Dr. Deer, welcome to Texas. Welcome to Texas Tech in Lubbock. We're glad you're here.
Well, I'm very glad to be here. Thank you.
The title of your lecture is Who Cares About the Scientific Revolution? If you would, first of all, tell us, so what is the scientific revolution?
It's a name that's been applied by historians for quite some decades now to a period in early modern Europe covering basically the 16th and 17th centuries, that's to say running from about 1500 to about 1700, that runs from the time of Copernicus in the early 16th century, who put the Earth in motion around the Sun, where the Earth had previously been regarded as stationary at the center of the universe, all the way through to Isaac Newton at the end of the 17th century, who invents universal gravitation and gives us an infinite universe and things of that sort. And it's regarded as a massive period of change in European understanding of the natural world. So it includes big names besides Copernicus and Newton, big names like Galileo, for example, and his astronomical discoveries and cosmological ideas. So it's a name that indicates that something big happened in Europe in those two centuries. And that's also a period that seems to, for many people, constitute the origins of modern science, of modern scientific institutions and enterprises.
Since your lecture was last evening, we don't have to worry about giving away the store. We can actually talk about all of the things that you discussed. Why did you title your lecture, Who Cares About the Scientific Revolution?
Because I'm particularly interested in precisely the use of that term. I said that it's been routinely used for a good few decades now. It really came into popular usage among historians in the years following the Second World War. And what's interesting about it, or one of the things, is the extent to which people have been very concerned to talk about the period in particular ways that go to support their particular views on what science is and what makes good science and what makes a good society that can support science of that kind. So there have been battles over the years between Marxist historians and historians opposed to Marxist explanations, social explanations of the origins of science. People who have wanted to argue that science originated from practical and economic needs being met by scientific work, and others saying, no, science arose from intellectual curiosity, which was unlinked to social status or to economic incentives. And those sorts of considerations what it matters to people as to what you call a period is part of what I was interested in talking about in my lecture here, to see why the term is important for some and why it's a contestable term as well, and what that says about people's views about the nature of scientific knowledge and the nature of societies that support such scientific knowledge.
In some of the literature that I had received prior to your coming to Texas Tech, it indicated that there was controversy, and should there actually be a debate over this particular name of the scientific revolution? Unpack that a bit for us. Tell us exactly what's going on in the community of thought about that.
Many historians of science in recent decades, last 20 years, let's say, have begun to suspect that the term the scientific revolution is a bit of an oversell, a term that makes it sound as if everything changed over those two centuries, radically different from what came before. So now many historians like to say that change was incremental. It wasn't simply a matter of overturning older ideas and replacing them with the tenets of modern science, and that if we want to understand historically where modern science came from, we have to take just as seriously the continuities with what came before as we do the changes that occurred in that period. So, for example, one of the questions that's often been contested is the role of the Church, of Christianity, in the development of modern science. It used to be said long ago, even before the term scientific revolution became normal, that modern science had somehow resulted from a rejection of Christianity. More recently, historians have been viewing the ways in which the culture of the Middle Ages, a very clerical culture, actually helped to pave the way for some of the approaches and ideas about nature that emerged particularly strongly with the big names of the scientific revolution, like Copernicus, who was a member of the Catholic Church, or Galileo, who claimed himself to be a devout Catholic, or Newton, who certainly was not a Catholic and in fact was something of a heretic, but for whom religious concerns were foremost in his mind much of the time, in fact for most of his career. So whether the term scientific revolution is appropriate or not, to some extent, depends on whether you see it as a radical break with what came before or as the consequence of what came before.
Is this sort of incremental way of doing things, is that a reasonable argument? Is that what you think?
On the whole, I think so. It's rather dangerous to talk about history in terms of revolutions, whether the scientific revolution or the industrial revolution or political revolutions like the French Revolution. It's too easy to say a revolution occurred and then everything was different, because that's a cheap way of trying to explain historical change. If you explain historical change by saying, well, things were this way, and then there was a revolution, and then they were a quite different way, you don't have to explain how you move from one situation to the next. You just represent it as some radical break in history. It's much harder, but much more rewarding, to try to see beyond the vision of a break, to see continuity, to see things that did not change over the course of things that we sometimes call revolutions. Because that way we have to get deeper inside human societies and see what makes them tick, rather than just saying, well, there was a revolution and everything was overthrown.
What is at stake in this debate? What difference does it make in the end? Is there a societal difference in how we proceed forward?
There have been arguments that have been made in the past about the nature of the society that can sustain effective and progressive science. So there has been longstandingly a position that holds that liberal democratic societies are the best kinds of societies for supporting science, because science, it's argued, depends on liberality, openness, free exchange of ideas, and so forth, and those, therefore, are the values that should be possessed by any society that can support that kind of knowledge. It's not clear whether that is still a sustainable position, in fact. So much of science now involves patenting ideas rather than rendering them freely available. And there's certainly a good deal of secrecy in science, at least for certain stages of the research process, that follows from the fact that science is, in very many areas, eminently patentable. So it's difficult to say which is the right model, but certainly general discussions of the nature of a society, how a society has to be, what values a society has to have in order to sustain successful science, those questions and those debates are very much central to understanding the place of science in our modern world and what it means to talk about a scientific civilization, which we seem to be seeing emerging globally.
Dr. Peter Deere, thank you very, very much for being with us today. We really appreciate it. Tell us just a little bit about your duties at Cornell University.
I'm a member of the History Department at Cornell, but I'm also a member of a newer department called the Department of Science and Technology Studies. As a member of the History Department, I, of course, teach courses on the history of science and other sorts of courses for the History Department. As a member of the Department of Science and Technology Studies, I teach courses specifically about the history of science, of course, again, but also more general courses to do with the study of science as a social and cultural phenomenon.
Dr. Stephen Baltz, if I may say so, you appear to have hit another home run.
Thank you so much.
with bringing really fantastic speakers.
Thank you.
Great. Tell us again, this particular week is just about finished up, but tell us the next in the series of lectures and symposia that you have for us.
So the next week we will be doing, which is going to be devoted to Shakespeare and his legacy, will be that which runs from April 2nd to April 6th. We haven't completed our arrangements, but we're going to have lectures on subjects like how Shakespeare has been staged over the ages, Shakespeare and his times. We're going to set Shakespeare in his Elizabethan context. We'll have a lecture on Shakespeare and opera, Shakespeare and ballet, and several other things. And the distinguished scholar coming in for that week will be Paul Cantor of the University of Virginia, a well-known Shakespearean, but also a student of popular culture. He's written books, for example, about things like The Simpsons, and I think we'll find some rather interesting thematic integration during his stay. He'll be on campus for 2 days doing a whole variety of things, as Dr. Deere has. So that's for April. A little early yet to say all of the events that will occur as far as our programming in September and November are concerned. Our speaker in September on the founding of the American Republic will be political theorist William Allen, formerly of Michigan State University, also formerly and interestingly chairman of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission. And then in November, when we deal with the Great War, it'll be one of America's leading authorities on that subject, Jay Winter of Yale, will be visiting.
It sounds great. I certainly hope that you will come back and visit with us about each of those.
We definitely will.
Dr. Baltz, Dr. Deere, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Today's edition of The Front Row will be up on our website, kttz.org, later today. Rachel Boyd produces The Front Row. I'm Clint Barrick. Thanks for listening.